Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs.
Hi, and welcome back to Your Family Dog. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here, of course, with the fabulous Tina Spring. And today we decided that we wanted to revisit a couple of things. One was a Wilt Chamberlain quote, which I'm going to have Tina say because I can't remember it exactly. And I know she can't.
Probably going to paraphrase it, but I'll be close enough for government work, right?
That's right.
The Wilt Chamberlain quote, and I use this quote all the time, is, and I attribute it to Wilt Chamberlain each time, is that he has this great, he has a lot of great quotes, but he has a great quote about everything is habit forming. So be careful what you practice, right? So we've all heard the adage, practice makes perfect. And that's not actually true. Perfect practice makes perfect. If all of the rehearsals that you do are wrong, like if I practice making a three backwards, well, then I'll get really good at making backward threes, but I'm not getting it right. And so we wanted to interrelate this a little bit specifically with puppies. It, of course, is true for older dogs as well. And also, honestly, for our family members, for me, for you, for your kiddos, for grandma, for all of the people. And I'm not saying, and I don't think Julie is either, that everything has to be perfect all the time. There are a lot of times in life where good enough is just good enough. And that's okay, right? If your towels are not in red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet order, Rigi-Biv order, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. No one, if they're judging your linen closet, tell them that they're not coming over again. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. But some things we do have to expend our energy making sure that we are not having inappropriate rehearsals. And that brought us to a conversation about puppies.
Right. And so what we decided to do was talk about puppies in the context of practicing things. And one of the things that is so easy to do is to look at that cute little 8-week-old puppy. And when he looks at you and he puts his paws up on your knee and, you know, licks your leg and he's just so cute and you bend down and you cuddle him for that, what are you doing? You're reinforcing a behavior that you may not want him to be doing in the future, which is jumping up on you, especially if he's a big dog or going to be a big dog, like a Berner or a Lab or something, even small dogs. So you don't really want them jumping up on you or up on your children.
Or if you're someone who has a lot of really nice clothes that are important to you and you wear white and you don't want to be dirty all the time, right? Like there's all sorts of
There are people
reasons.
Like that in the world? Because I'm I haven't been.
I don't know. I'm getting
close to that person in a long time.
So here in Georgia, it's 86 today, right? On we're recording on April 17th. It's 86. I'm a little terrified about what August is going to bring. But so it's skort weather for me, right? The skorts look a little bit dressier for teaching than just, you know, you walk in and your dog trainers in shorts. Usually they have pockets, which make me very happy. And so I don't want my legs all scraped up from puppy toenails or adult dog toenails. I would prefer not to have, you know, scratches all over me. So sometimes as we're transitioning, right, if all winter your puppy was jumping on you because you were wearing denim jeans that protected you and your kids, and now we're headed into short weather, suddenly for that puppy, they're getting a reaction, a response from us that has some pretty big feelings associated with it because we might be getting dirty or uncomfortably, you know, scratched or injured. Not like seriously injured, but injured.
Right. But on the other hand, if you are an older person with very thin skin and you're on a blood thinner,
absolutely,
this could be a serious wound. And so so if you want to take Boomer or Sparky or Fifi or whatever whoever your dog is to visit grandma, you want to make sure that they're not going to cause damage to either grandma or any of grandma's friends in the nursing home.
Yeah. And so actually, the lesson that I have immediately following us recording the podcast today is a young woman, college age, who has a, like a 5-year-old dog. She just moved into a house that is next door to an elderly couple who were very friendly and like her dog, but she is really concerned that the dog is going to jump on them and hurt them. So this is all part and parcel of what I do all day long, is helping people set their dogs up for success. And that's what I'll be talking about with that customer and what I'm going to talk to y'all about today. So first, I will say I talk people out of puppies all the time, constantly.
Yes.
Especially when people have really little kids, right? If you have a crazy busy household, if you're going 6 directions with 4 kids, if you're feeling like you don't have time to pay attention and to get laundry done and to like feel like a human being, then likely a puppy is an awful idea. And one of the, you know, people are always saying to me, well, I want my kids to experience a puppy. I'm like, why? Why? This puppy is not going to be a puppy that long. Like, they're going to have a lot more experience with an adult dog. And we can go and get an adult dog that is adores children and is already trained. We can do that pretty easily. It doesn't mean that when a dog is available for adoption, that there's necessarily anything wrong with them.
Right. I was going to say dogs can come up for a wide variety of reasons. When you said, you know, people say, I want my children to experience a puppy. I think maybe if they took a step back, what they'd say is, I want my child to grow up with a dog, which is very different than I want my child to experience a puppy. So I think that's the first thing, is that you kind of have to say, really? Or are you really just want your dog, your child to be dogs? But I was going to say one thing that happened, Brad's on this, on I don't know how many different Clumber groups. And so I am inundated with Clumber pictures, which they are adorable. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love every one of them. But there was this very sad post about this woman in England who was killed in a traffic accident.
Oh,
and they needed and had no family. And so they need someone to adopt her two Clumbers, who were fine dogs. And I said to Brad, if we were living in Berwick on Tweedshire on the Marsh, which is, you know, I mean, Britain has some really interesting town names. Like,
I mean, so does the US. I want to say there's a town in Indiana called Lickskillet.
Okay. So anyway, but these dogs were in Berkshire on the Tweed or whatever. And I said, if we were living in Berkshire on the Tweed, I would go adopt those dogs. No question in my mind.
Right.
So our dogs become available. And one of the things that I've been longing for, a golden retriever for like a year and a half now. So Brad's Clumber breeder also has Goldens that she breeds. So I said, maybe we should contact her and find out if she has any dogs if she wants to retire.
That's Clemmy's been so easy.
Well, I'd get a Golden, not another Clumber. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Clemmy has, but we love her. This is the thing I keep saying.
She makes you laugh all day long. She just also drives your blood pressure up. Okay. So yesterday I have a retirement age gentleman. His wife is still working. They have a disabled daughter who lives with them. They have the sweetest, kindest cavalier puppy in the world. They also have 4 cats. The cats have been raised with another cavalier. So they're not afraid of the cav. However, they are not enjoying a puppy. The puppy, so the husband is not really a dog person. He's a cat person. He didn't want a dog. He has a dog because his daughter and his wife are both dog people, and he already has 4 cats. So we've already got this situation where there's been a compromise. So he came to class yesterday and just like unleashed on me that the two ladies don't like to manage the puppy in any way whatsoever. Like, not a leash, not a tether, not a crate, not a playpen, nothing. And that he ends up doing all the management with the puppy, and that the puppy has started eating their sofa. He got the cell phone twice yesterday. He keeps stealing pens and having pens. And these are all things that are pretty dangerous to this puppy.
Yes.
right?
Yes.
And so
the pocketbook.
Well, I mean, he's not that tall. I don't know how he's reaching the phone, but that's a story for another day. So one of the things I would say is don't feel bad when you're like, okay, that's it. You're going for a nap in your crate, right? I can't watch you go take a nap, right? Your dog needs a tremendous amount of sleep anyway, puppies doubly so. And if the only time you crate them is when you're leaving and at night, one, I'll almost guarantee your dog is overtired. And two, it means that when you need to crate them, say when that awful food poisoning situation occurs where the entire family is carrying around either hanging out in bathrooms or carrying around pots, that this is like, you don't want the dog just randomly walking around the house. Like that's going to end really badly. So getting flexibility in behavior where your dog is perfectly content to, I'm not saying put them in doggy jail. Like you can give them something to chew on. You can be like, here, have a nice no hide to chew on. Here's a stuffed frozen toy, stuffed with food. Like here are good things happening for you.
Right. There's all kinds of wonderful things.
Yeah.
All kinds of wonderful things you can do to make the crate a great place to be. This is not solitary confinement.
But I will also say, like, these people did not need a puppy. They really didn't, right? They're not in, I mean, he's adorable. And he's honestly, like, the easiest puppy I've ever seen. He's really, really easy. However, puppies are time-consuming, like, even when they're really good, sweet, kind puppies. Even when they're easy puppies, they still require a tremendous amount of energy.
Yeah, they're babies. And babies require a lot of attention because they can't take care of themselves. They can't do it. And so you have, and they don't know what the rules are. And you've got to.
And in the meantime, imagine what happens when this puppy, who is probably going to live to be 16 or 18, thinks chewing on the sofa is okay.
Yeah, no, yeah, right. Because what, once again, going back to the Chamberlain quote, what he's practicing, the habits that he is developing are ones that we don't want him to develop. And we can't just say, oh, that's him being a puppy. The problem is that's him being a puppy and learning how it is to be a dog.
Right. Right. And so when I can get people to reframe and recognize that what, like, you have to a certain extent, it is like parenting. When we have a dog or a puppy, our goal is to set them up for success so we don't have to watch them like a hawk the rest of their lives. So there's a reason we don't have foxes in our house. But if you let a puppy go rogue, you're going to have a fox.
Yeah,
right? You're going to have a dog that puts their mouth on everything and chews everything and gets into everything. And it's dangerous for the dog and it's dangerous for your family. And by the way, this does not just mean chewing on things. This, you know, it's house training, it's going for a walk and following your puppy when they're pulling you or your dog when they're pulling you. It's jumping on people at the door. It's putting their feet on the edge of the table when you're eating dinner. It's counter surfing. It's knocking the trash can over. It's all the mischievous things that dog. So, lady,
are you talking about Clementine?
I mean, Dovey, and butter and a ribeye. So I can't tease you too much about Clemmy. So what I would, but again, like Dovey's behaviors like that come from the previous household. We were just dumb and reinforced it accidentally. So now we don't, right? So now Dovey can go in the kitchen. There is nothing on the counter that can be ingested in theory. Right. I don't think he can eat my mixer. I don't think he can eat the toaster. Like, and I don't think that's going to happen. So the
metal tends to be pretty.
Yeah.
So sort of self-aware. Dogs are very aware that metal is
self-limiting.
Self-limiting.
So I think that as a trainer, this is one of the hardest things to help a family grapple with. your puppy, your dog is learning like your children with every single repetition. Even if you're tired, even if you're hungover, even if you have a headache, even if you're in a hurry. And so the more that you can be cognizant of that and really think in terms of not, well, I'm just going to hurry so we can get this walk in around the block, and your dog pulls and barks and carries on like a lunatic the whole way. But instead, think to yourself, it would be better that for that 30 minutes, we successfully, politely walk up and down the driveway so that one day in the future, when I have the bandwidth, I can work on my dog reacting to the dog that barks behind the fence at my dog every single time we walk by.
Right. And the more you practice in an area, for example, I was working with a client who had a German Shepherd, and she really needed this dog to walk nicely. So I gave her some parameters. But one of the things I said was, you can't leave the driveway and start walking down the sidewalk until you can go up and down the driveway several times with the dog right next to you, so that you're in a very low distraction area. And as soon as you can do that, then we can start adding, you know, 5-10 feet at a time down the sidewalk. But you have to establish the routine before you start expanding the boundaries within which we can practice this routine.
Well, and I would say, like, if on your walk, some of this stuff is really easy if you just take the time, right? If I go a low frequency reinforcement rate, so here you get a piece of string cheese, like every 30 seconds when we're on the part of the walk that is easy for the dog to navigate, as we approach the house with the dog that loses its mind behind the fence, I'm going to physically slow down. I'm going to increase my reinforcement rate. So the frequency of reinforcement is going to happen much, much on a much higher level. I may even cross the street to give my dog more space. And yes, the exact moment where my dog goes, wait, I think we're going near that house. When something changes for my dog, I'm going to hold and wait. I'm going to wait for my dog to settle. We're going to turn around. We're going to go the other way. We're going to come back to that spot again. So we're going to take a little mini break. We're going to see, like, are you okay at this spot right now?
Right. What you need to remember is that this is a process by which you gradually, and I do mean gradually, increase the level of distraction or difficulty. And in proportion to that, you also increase the level of reinforcement. So that what you're saying to the dog basically is, I know this is really hard for you. And because it's hard, you can anticipate that I'm going to pay you well for doing what I want you to do.
Well, and more than that, I'm going to advocate for you that I'm not going to throw you in the deep end of the pool when you don't know how to doggy paddle.
Right. And so part of it is that I also know the instant where I perhaps push this too soon, that it doesn't matter how many full chickens I have to shove into their face. If they can't turn and look at me, they can't respond, then I push you too far. So let's back way up, calm ourselves down, do something successful, and try another time.
And so I sometimes try to say, okay, if you were walking with a toddler, right, you have to adjust your speed to the toddler. You can't ask them to run around the block, right?
Absolutely.
Secondly, if they get to something where, for example, a dog is behind a fence freaking out at your kid, are you going to keep marching them closer to it?
No, you're not. At least you, because I think the last thing that I think most parents will recognize, that the way to teach a child to not be afraid of a barking dog is not to throw them at the barking dog. I think most parents understand that the way to teach a child that it's okay is to back up, give them some space and reinforcement. Hey, look, see, nothing bad's
right.
happening.
Did you see that dog over there? Nothing bad happened. Exactly.
Right. We're not we're not going to get any closer at this point. I understand that this is scary for you. Let's move on to something else.
Does it mean that you might have to turn around and walk the other direction? Sure, but you're not always going to have to do that. The same way that one day your toddler will have legs long enough and motor skills sufficient that they'll be able to walk around the block with you and you won't have to slow down for them. Your dog, if the moment something happens that the dog has an emotional shift, if in that moment you are aware of it and you adjust, you will get further faster. And your dog won't rehearse losing their marbles walking past Rufus, the Ibizan terror hound who's threatening to kill him the whole time from behind the electric fence that is shocking the dog.
Right.
And informing that dog's decision.
Right. So I think what this is all about is that you just, part of it is that I sometimes say to people, you know, is there something that you're scared of? For example, if spiders, for me, it would be snakes, as we discussed in the last episode, or one of our last episodes, is that the way to get somebody used to something that they're afraid of is not to flood them, not to throw them into a pit of snakes or a pit of spiders. Instead, what you want to do is you want to reassure them they're okay, make sure they feel safe, and slowly introduce to them. Perhaps the first thing you introduce to them is a plastic spider or a plastic snake so that, you know, they begin to understand. So it's the same thing with your dog. As you're teaching your dog how to behave, ask yourself, if this was a brand new situation for me, if I was certainly sort of deposited here from planet dog and I didn't speak the language and there's all this stuff going on around me, how would I want to be treated? And I think that people go, oh, okay, well, when you put it that way, yeah, this could be really, really hard.
Exactly.
So
the moral of today's story is that we want you to think about where inappropriate rehearsals might be happening. And then we want you to think about how you can either get in front of it, meaning, right, if your dog thinks it's great fun every morning to grab one of your slippers and run through the house while you're yelling at him, chasing him. That might be fine on Saturday morning when you're feeling great and you got to sleep in. It's probably not going to be great when you have a headache and a stomach bug. So let's stop the rehearsals, right? And there's lots of ways to do that. You could teach a dog a drop it cue. You can have a special toy that when you get up in the morning, you give it to the dog and they get to run around the house with it. And you make a great big deal out of it for them instead of your slipper. It can be that you decide that is going to be the sacrificial slipper and you will never wear that slipper again. And you don't care. Your dog that would be the Clementine plan. Just give her the sacrificial slipper and call it a day. Right there. You have lots. And by the way, kids and dogs give us 10,000 repetitions to get it right.
Oh, absolutely. I remember thinking with my kids, even if I handled the situation incorrectly, there was a virtual 100% guarantee that I would get a second chance at this.
Absolutely.
And even if I handled it correctly, I probably would get a second, you know, chance.
You'd get the opportunity to screw it up next time. So I'm sure you were a better parent than I was. I tried to be a really good parent. And I know most people try to be a really good parent. All the situations where you're like infuriated with your dog, likely you can make some adjustments and that source of frustration will go away pretty quickly. If you just take the time to work on it a little bit, honestly, most dogs, if you spend 5 minutes, six times practicing having a loose leash and then watching the world go by and not losing their marbles about it, you will make your walk a thousand times easier.
Absolutely.
If you put your dog in the crate while you're preparing dinner and you give them their dinner in a stuffed frozen Kong, it will take them 30 minutes likely to finish it. And you can eat your dinner and clean up, and your dog doesn't get to steal something off the counter. They don't get to eat the chicken nugget that fell under the table. The dog doesn't learn to resource guard that space. It'll be more peaceful. And if your dog doesn't rehearse begging at the table and hiding under the table and stealing chicken nuggets, which are very reinforcing, then they don't learn it. They don't learn the behavior. They're going to try occasionally, but you go, hey, have you lost your mark? Like, I don't know. My dogs and my children knew. Are you new? Which is like, have you hit your head? Have you forgotten what the family rules are? Because we don't do that here. Like, except Mister. He does all naughty things. He's the Clementine of our house.
I was going to say, everyone should have a Clementine. It teaches patience.
Mister teaches me how messy my house is. That's what.
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
and how anything can be climbed.
Well,
I have
Clementine,
never seen a dog climb like this.
Clementine, she teaches me, I guess, to let go of a few things, because I got to tell you, I swear, the dog sheds a dogga an hour, right? So there's it's like I can get all the hair up and just like, oh, look, I can walk through the house and not have this cloud of silver everywhere.
And in the end, it doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't.
So
she brings
one of the huge benefits of dogs is that they create an oxytocin dump for us and for them. They give us a dopamine dump because they can be such a source of comfort to us. And I do believe that we can be a source of comfort to them as well.
And I agree.
So try to just slow down. And if you have a problem, if you have a situation where you find yourself in conflict with your pet, with other family members, feel free to email us or message us.
Yes, absolutely.
We help with those cases pretty regularly. Like often, just a couple of little changes will have huge benefit for your dog and your family. And if you're thinking about getting a puppy and you even have a child under 8, I want you to really, really reconsider and let us help you find an adult dog that'll be a great fit for your household. That will that will feed the love affair that you want for you and for your family with a dog.
Right. Because what we want you to do is maybe take a step back and ask your question. Why do I want a dog? You know, why do I want a puppy? You know, what is it that I'm looking for? Because the answer may be a little bit different than what you think it is. You know, what is it that I'm actually looking for? If I'm looking for a great companion for my kids, you know, that's we're talking about, you know, like years, not just moments. And that you can build a great relationship. I just think, like, Zuzu came to me at 16 months of age, and it was enchanting. It was absolutely wonderful to have a dog who is housebroken, and we couldn't be more bonded. And people think, well, you know, I'm just not going to bond it. That's not true. I think that you can bond very well to an adult dog, and I don't think you have to have a puppy.
Today in my memory, popped up when Scruffy Dog was sadly beginning pneumonia that cost him his life. He had COPD from a situation that he lived in previously. We didn't know that. Anyway, so he only lived with us 3 years. We got him when he was like 6, and we adored him, and he adored us. I was so sad when we lost him 3 years later. You would be amazed how an adult dog landing in a soft place where they're accepted and where they're loved and where they can play fetch with your kids immediately and they can go yeah. on a walk immediately. You would be amazed how wonderful that bond can really be.
Our rebel was like that. We were living in Virginia and he was, Brad and Emma were jogging on the Chancellorsville battlefield and they heard this woof and they looked down and there was this dog was caught in the pricker bushes in the bottom of a trench. So they brought him home and we called him our Confederate trenching setter since we didn't know what he was. But anyway, we named him Rebel because he was found in a rebel trench. And we took him to the vet and the vet said, I don't know, he's somewhere between 6 and 9. I'm like, okay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We couldn't find his home. So we had him for 6 years and people would ask me, how old is he? I said, I don't know, somewhere between 12 and dead. But he was a great dog and we loved him dearly and he loved us and he loved the other dogs we brought into the house. He was one of the funniest, most enjoyable dogs we have ever had. I still miss Rebel. He was right. such a great dog.
So in my household right now of 4 dogs, only one have I raised from a puppy. I mean, Mister, we got when he was 10. Jack was between 2 and 3. Dovey was 18 months old, right? Jack almost seamlessly moved into our home. He was already house trained. He was already leash trained. He was a little bit of a maniac yelling at children on bikes. We've worked through that, right? It's amazing to me how people sometimes miss that your dog is going to spend a lot more time as a dog than they are as a puppy. The same way your kids are going to spend yes. a lot of time as an adult. They're not mm-hmm. always going to be kids. They're definitely not always going to be babies. That goes by like in the blink of an eye.
Oh, yeah. I felt like things were pretty steady. Time wasn't zipping along until they turned 10. And then once my kid turned 10, next thing I know, they're 25. It just, bam, it goes so fast.
I have 10 years then to get the baby's quilt made.
Yes. Yes. Something along that line. So
let me say this too. So I'm learning to quilt. It's something I have always wanted to do. I have never done it because I perceive that everything had to be perfect. I am learning that good enough is good enough by moving through this relatively steep learning curve. I will also say that I am learning that I am not going to be perfect or even remotely perfect at anything the first go. And that is totally okay. I just want to make a different mistake each time I make a mistake. So if you heard me muttering at myself while quilting, it's pretty amusing. Christopher finds himself giggling pretty regularly. But I'm still endeavoring to mess it up a different way next time. My seam ripper and I are not nearly spending the quality time that we were spending 2 weeks ago anymore. That's not happening because I'm getting better at the things I'm learning. And I'm giving myself permission that this will be a lifelong journey and that I can just the quilts I make now, I will be embarrassed about in 5 years. And that's okay because they're still made with love. I still, for me, talked to God the whole time I was doing it. I was doing some self-care and that I'm learning something that isn't easy and it's okay that I make a mistake. It's okay that your dog makes a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I've been quilting for many, many years now and sort of off and on. I quilt for a while and then I stop for a while. And I do all my own hand piecing and hand quilting. I don't use a machine. So that makes me an anachronism or anachronistic. But anyway, I started on a quilting project. And what I realized, Tina, is that when you don't practice skills, sometimes you have to relearn them. Like I'm doing an applique right. project. And so I have my basic applique stitch and suddenly I'm looking and going, oh, if you actually did it this way, Julie, which is the way you were taught 30 years ago, it would be easier. And so I was halfway through the second, I'm doing these small squares, halfway through the second square, I went, okay, well, I'm not going to go back and redo, but I'm glad I remembered. And you know, sometimes you have to give yourself the grace. And then I put the border on one of them on wrong. So that had to come off. And that was me talking to myself. And Brad gets used to that too.
But hopefully it was kindly.
Yes. But it was one of those things that I, you know, not only do you, is it okay to make mistakes? It's okay to relearn something. You know, I think about like when I've been curling and I was struggling with something, and a woman who's been curling for, I don't know, 20 years, she said, you know, whenever this happens to me, and I'm like, what do you mean whenever it happens to you? I go back and I do this exercise because it regrounds me and reteaches me how to come out of the hack. And I'm like, okay, if Jen, who's been curling for over 20 years, has to every once in a while go back and redo something, it's okay if I do. And therefore, it's okay if I have to go back and remind my dog of what the lesson is, of what the rules are.
Well, because they're changing every day too.
Yeah.
Like I'm at an age where I feel like my vision is different every single day. It probably is. Probably changing, right? So it's a new day. It's a new day. And honestly, raising a puppy, raising a dog, raising kids, keeping a house, keeping a family, all of those things, it's a lot. It is a lot. Just make a different mistake each day and avoid avoidable suffering in the words of Andy Stanley, right? There is some suffering that is not avoidable, but a lot of it is. Avoid the avoidable suffering.
That's right. Or just know that you're headed towards sainthood, because in the words of St. Francis de Sales, hang on, I got to take this off the wall. All the science of the saints is included in these two things, to do and to suffer. And whoever has done these two things best has made himself most saintly. So think of it this way. If you're suffering, but you're working at it, man, you're headed towards sainthood. So with that, I think the reminder here is be gentle with yourself and your dog. Try not to set up mistakes with your dog that you're going to have to correct later. Think about how you want him to behave and focus on keeping those rules consistent with him so that he learns what it is you want him to do and what you do, rather than having to relearn something.
And if you're unsure how to navigate something, you have two dog trainers who are pretty decent at what we do who will love you through it. Feel
yes,
free
absolutely.
To email us at
your family dog podcast at iCloud.com. That's your family dog podcast at iCloud.com.
So on that note, please like and share this podcast. Share it with a parent or a grandparent near you. Please give us a thumbs up, a 5-star rating if you're like on Apple Podcasts. Set us as one of your in your podcatcher to listen to us and give us feedback. Tell us what you want to know about what
absolutely.
You because if you hear a story, if you know someone that we need to interview, let us know. This is for you. It's not for us. So let us know how we can best love you.
All right. That sounds great. And so we'll see you all next time on Your Family Dog.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.